Hi, I'm Aislinn Antrim with Pharmacy Times. Welcome to Pharmacy Focus Psychedelic Pharmacy, where we take a look at one of the fastest growing markets in healthcare, psychedelic medicine. This month, I spoke with Joseph Arujo, Chief Scientific Officer at Mindset Pharma, to learn about the interesting differences between natural and synthetic psychedelics and what these differences mean for the future of pharmacy and psychedelic medicine.
Wonderful. So to kind of get kind of a baseline of knowledge, what is meant by natural versus synthetic psychedelics?
When people talk about natural psychedelics, they're referring to products from either animals, fungi, the plant kingdom that can be, you know, consumed in some way. And depending on where that comes from, that can be inhaled. It could be orally consumed. That causes a psychedelic experience. And so the major differentiator when we talk about synthesized psychedelics are typically we're looking at what is believed to be the active molecule in that natural product being synthesized under sort of standard pharmaceutical conditions to ideally elicit a similar experience as that natural product. Now, that's not always simple because in some cases natural products might have more than one compound, but ultimately I think that's the simplest way to think about the two differences.
That makes sense. You've kind of touched on this, but are there biological differences or different effects? How does that work?
So that's a real interesting question, and I think the easy answer is, you know, we haven't done studies to really understand whether in most cases natural products or natural psychedelics are going to have an identical effect as a synthesized compound. That's certainly the belief in a lot of cases, but there are also exceptions. For example, with ayahuasca, where in the natural scenario, there's two different plants combined that essentially one allows the other to be orally bioavailable. So in this synthetic case, you only have the one compound. So this is DMT specifically, and DMT is not orally bioavailable. So the thinking today is that there should be a similar, let's say, medicinal effect. The other unknowns are how other compounds within the same animal, plant, fungi might interact, and what's been referred to in the cannabis sort of culture as the entourage effect, and that's still also unknown and really hasn't been thoroughly explored.
Wonderful. What are the shortfalls of natural psychedelics, and what do synthetic options offer that naturals maybe don't?
So I think one of the important differentiations is the ability to better control dose. So when you synthesize a compound, you can synthesize it at a specific level of purity, which then allows you to be able to determine a dose, you know, pretty in a standard way. When you look at natural psychedelics, it's not necessarily known a priori how much of the active ingredient is within that specific batch that you have. So mushrooms, for example, from, you know, different species, different areas could have different quantities of psilocybin. That could change over time. That can change by environment. And so I think the biggest differentiator is really being able to control dose. And then, of course, only having a single compound may allow you to better predict that outcome. You know, when you have a natural product where there could be hundreds of molecules and they may have unique interactions, it becomes really difficult to predict what that outcome might be from both a pharmacokinetics and a pharmacodynamics perspective.
Definitely. To kind of clarify, when we're talking about psychedelics, typically right now in sort of a clinic environment, someone might be receiving this. Are those almost always going to be synthetic at this point? And where does the research stand on which are being used?
Yeah, and that's a great question. So I think you need to sort of take a step higher. And if we're looking at a clinical environment, we're ultimately talking about drug development and trying to treat some specific disease. And so regulatory agencies are really clear on the level of manufacturing you require. And so it's you know, plants are, I can't think of an example that's really in its own right been, you know, been declared a drug that's used clinically. So there is the possibility of using, you know, a GMP level extraction techniques to maybe take parts of a natural product and purify them to a point where they might meet a regulatory standard. But I think in pretty much all cases, and we're going to be talking about some synthetic or some cGMP level preparation of that compound before it goes into a therapeutic, in a real therapeutic setting and as a drug.
Have you listened to the array of other podcasts from Pharmacy Focus? We have content for every specialty, including retail pharmacists, technicians, students, and more. In the latest episode of Pharmacy Focus, Dr. Christina Madison spoke with several experts to discuss speaking your voice and amplifying your message through platforms like TED and TEDx. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
How is psychedelics research and kind of the kind of increase in this research in recent years possibly signaling a larger shift in how healthcare is really approaching mental health and mental health treatments?
So there was a lot of research that was conducted in the 50s and in 60s with a lot of these substances, some of which were natural and some of which were synthetic. I'll just add that in. And we're seeing a resurgence now, I think, due to the fact that there's been fairly limited novel approaches to treating certain mental health diseases. Combine that with the increased prevalence that we're seeing, you know, coming out of COVID for a variety of reasons that, you know, sort of beyond the scope of this conversation. This truly offers a potential way to treat mental health for at least some patients. And unique in the sense that we're seeing a single dose in some cases having a year-long durability of effect, which really sort of changes the framework. So there's probably the most interesting part of this research is trying to understand how those long-term effects are differentiated from that immediate acute mechanism of action and why we're getting durability and why these drugs are so different than, let's say, classical, you know, antipsychotics or antidepressants.
Wonderful. Many areas of pharmaceuticals, and specifically oncology, have shifted towards an at-home care model in recent years, partially due to COVID, really accelerating that shift. But do you predict the same for psychedelics? What could that look like?
So if I had that crystal ball and was able to predict, I think what we'll see initially is going to be an in-clinic care setting. Really, these drugs, you know, I think regulatory agencies, physicians, and patients alike are going to want to have an increased comfort level. And you know, that comes in safe environments. And I think there is, though, a potential that down the road, as we learn more about these molecules, that there could be an at-home model. But just trying to understand how that framework will develop, you know, it's somewhat baby steps in terms of how we're going to be administering this. But I certainly think it will be within a clinical setting for at least the near future.
Definitely. I know with kind of the process of developing some synthetic psychedelics, there is the chance to kind of reduce some of the adverse effects that are possible. I've read some about even reducing kind of the hallucinogenic effects in some cases. Do you think that could help in the future shift it towards a little more accessibility, not requiring such a controlled environment if you don't have those adverse effects?
Absolutely. And I think you've really touched on what our approach at Mindset has been since the beginning, which, you know, known psychedelic drugs seem to be, you know, seem to have positive effects and may really be useful. But one could potentially, you know, using medicinal chemistry, modify those molecules to either make them safer, change their duration of action. So in some cases, make them longer, make them shorter, and potentially change the nature of that psychedelic experience by either trying to eliminate it or reduce it or make it, in some cases, maybe more amenable to more people. So I think that's one of the advantages of novel psychedelic chemistry. And that's what we're really excited about and have. We've developed several different families of compounds, which are all unique from a pharmacological perspective. And, you know, really excited to see how they behave in people.
Absolutely. That's exciting. In all of these kind of different things that we've discussed, what role do you think pharmacists are playing and will play in psychedelic medicines?
I think the role, you know, ideally, these are going to be medicines like all other medicines. And so the role, I don't think, will be substantially different than what it is in terms of a current clinical practice, right? Preparation of doses, understanding interactions, being able to, really use data that's derived in a real controlled way to inform patients and to help them along the way. So I think it's an essential role. And really, you know, you need those types healthcare professionals to really, you know, help make sure people are going to maintain their health and advise them in the right direction.
Thanks for listening to Pharmacy Focus Psychedelic Pharmacy. Tune in next month to hear about fascinating research into the potential uses of psychedelic medicines for patients receiving palliative care.